Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. It is a wonderful Wednesday morning, March 19th. Chamber of Commerce weather for sure here in Tucson. All kinds of amazing things are happening in the Old Pueblo, and I am here to bring them all to you this Wednesday morning. First and foremost on your food for thought, the City Council had their meeting last night in a sort of post-Proposition 414 world, and they had a lot to talk about over here as well, too. You know, a lot of picking up the pieces over here. How do they handle that $27 million budget deficit? Well, to begin with, it turns out there wasn't a $27 million budget deficit. I know you'll be shocked by this, Matt.
I just fell out of my chair.
Right. And so depending on who you listen to, because there was about 10 hours of meeting notes there, I've suffered through about 2.5 this morning.
You're a brave man.
Getting up at about 4 o'clock in the morning for you guys over here to listen to this and see. And they're estimating somewhere between about 11 and 17.8.
It's a Warsaw Treaty violation to have to endure that.
But this was something that we had a special election for. We spent $1.1 million to do an election to fix a budget deficit that almost wasn't even there. It was less than half of what they had originally declared for us, which was the genesis of this election to begin with. And of course, there were some votes about and some discussion about whether we were going to continue to allow camping in washes, continue to allow camping in parks, continue to allow panhandling from the medians, which panhandling on medians has been illegal for basically the last decade and then some, right?
Yeah.
There are certainly some laws.
Next meeting they're going to talk about should they continue to make bank robbing illegal. So I think that's the next one that they're going to tackle.
Correct. And when is it in society that we get to decide which laws we're going to enforce? Like, that's not part of mayor and council's position to decide which laws. They don't make those laws. They actually have to hire the agencies that enforce those laws that we've chosen as society. And so as we look into what those ramifications look like, the news hit that Fire Chief Chuck Ryan has abruptly resigned from his position. Was this related potentially to funding that didn't or maybe wouldn't have happened if 414 had passed or not? Hard to say, right?
Yeah, the news was sudden. He's been in charge since 2019. I mean, granted, 2020 through 2022 probably was no party for him to administer. But, 5 years in and then all of a sudden, you know, see you later.
Without a doubt. I mean, and these positions are a grind, right? Like, this is something I worry about. Even, you know, Police Chief Kazmer, like, how long does he have left in the tank? When you've reached that level of municipal retirement, right? It's part of the reason you take a job like this isn't because of the wonderful low stress job or super high salary you get. It's for the retirement. And when you reach that 20 or 25 or 30 years, it might just be time to take advantage of those benefits and tap out. And I worry that we may see that on our local police chief coming up soon here as well, too. Either way, right after the failure of 414 at the ballot, right, losing last week by over 70% of the constituency of Tucson's voting against this particular plan, Mayor Romero came out and said, I want to hear from those that were opposed to this. Where are the solutions? And had I not had to work last night, I literally would have went to the city council meeting and the call for audience. But having reviewed a couple hours of that this morning, I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because there was not members of the business community up there offering solutions, but instead the same old cast of characters arguing about employee pay and arguing about affordable housing and some of the things that aren't really making up the problems that we have inside the city of Tucson right now. We've already got a higher minimum wage than unincorporated Pima County. And even the affordable housing is, quite frankly, a function of our codes that we currently have, both for construction and for parking as well, too, Matt. I read an interesting book this week. I was looking at a restaurant space downtown, right? And I was struggling to find parking. I was driving around looking for street parking, right? Because there are meters. And the meters are relatively easy to use over here in Tucson. I have to say the Park Tucson app is pretty convenient.
Once you get it installed and the credit card and everything put in, it is, yes. I agree with you.
But the rates for the street parking are actually far less than the rates for the garages. Even though we would like to incentivize people to go to the garage, mm-hmm. it creates this sort of unholy incentive that you want to drive around from block to block looking for this score of street parking that's either free or perhaps it's 50 cents an hour or a dollar an hour, essentially less than market value. And as a business person, I start to think about these particular arrangements. Why is it that the most desirable street parking, the parking that you might get right in front of Charo Steak on Broadway, or those very few parking spaces on Congress that we've saved, right, for these businesses here, which we probably should have eliminated and turned into, say, street dining and whatnot, or even closed off Congress for two vehicular traffic.
Working on that argument, yes.
Is that, I've been arguing that one for over a decade here, but why is that street parking less than what the garages are? These are more desirable spaces, yet we've created a scenario in which they essentially are cheaper than market rate, forcing us to have this sort of unholy, allegiance to drive around 2, 3, 4, 5 blocks looking for that bonus of cheap street parking, creating more traffic, the very thing we're actually looking to eliminate to do. And it has to do with pricing. And it has to do with our parking laws. I read a very interesting book this week called Paved Paradise by a writer named Henry Graybar. Okay. And it happens to discuss these particular topics and how, say, even restaurant development, right, is hampered by parking. You need to have one parking space for every 100 square feet of customer space.
Yep.
Inside the city of Tucson. And without geeking out too much about those requirements, when you think of a parking space being, let's say, 9 by 18, let's say 200 square feet, 10 by 20 to make the math easy.
Okay.
200 square feet for a parking space. But yet you need to also have, ingress and egress driveways. So you might need 3 times that. You might need up to 600 square feet for one particular parking space. So suddenly you've got a 5,000 square foot restaurant, right? But you might need 15,000 square feet or 20,000 square feet of just parking just to make that happen. We end up with construction where you have buildings that have to sit on a lot that is 3 times the building size coated in blacktop, essentially preventing the very thing our mayor and city council want. In that meeting last night, I heard so many times people talk about, not just free fares, but a commute, a walkable city, our 15-minute city, right? Less cars. But yet when you have a building surrounded by an acre of blacktop, and then another building surrounded by an acre of blacktop, and another one, there's nothing about that that's even walkable at all, Matt. And so quite frankly, some of our parking codes and some of our municipal construction codes
don't line up with the goals that they're trying to espouse.
Correct. These are the solutions that the business community needs to bring to the table to mayor and council. And I invite mayor or any current city council members that would love to come on this show and have that discussion with me. I would love to sit down and put together a coalition, perhaps with the business community, to talk about these things, to break bread with them. Just because we disagree on some things politically doesn't mean we have to be disagreeable. We can figure out solutions together. And last night, I didn't see it at that city council meeting. I was kind of hoping that might have popped up over there.
Yeah.
I get it. It's like herding cats to get the business community together to discuss these sort of things with our electeds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also our responsibility to let them know, not just at the ballot box on 414, mm-hmm. but in general, to let them know what's working and what's not inside the city of Tucson. Part of the ways that we can let them know, too, is also running for races, right? Like, we've got an election coming up. There are 3 city council seats coming up in the month of November. And so there happen to already be 2 candidates, it looks like, right now for Ward 6 on the Republican side right now.
Oh, 2. I'd heard one.
Both of which are former restaurateurs. I have this show all the time, and people say, why do you talk about restaurants and politics together, right? And here it is, former Blush owner, Jonathan Homan. Uh-huh. He operated a restaurant and nightclub on 4th Avenue called Blush. It closed earlier this year. He has filed his paperwork to run for Ward 6 as a Republican. And Jay Tolkoff, who was the owner of PJ's Filling Station, the sub place on 6th Street in Tucson,
I had heard about. Yeah.
Also filed his paperwork. So now we've got possibly a Republican primary coming up. Who would have thought that in Ward 6, in any city council ward, that there would be a Republican primary? And if things don't change, we're going to end up with a primary in Ward 6, which should be pretty interesting, say the least.
You bet.
I've invited both Mr. Homan and Mr. Tolkoff to our show over here, too, and so hoping to get them in the next couple of weeks and discuss their intentions. But it does show the business community is getting involved over here. These are two small business owners who are absolutely fed up with the way things are going in the city of Tucson. And rather than showing up at the call to the audience, they're actually putting the axe to the grindstone and running for city council.
Very interesting.
And while that may be an uphill battle, right, Democrat voter registration would certainly suggest this is not going to be an easy race to run.
But it has happened under the current thing. You know, we had Fred Rodenstedt in Ward 6. We had Kathleen Dunbar in Ward 3. We had a Republican mayor. It can be done. Just have to have some discipline. You have to have a plan, and you have to knock on a lot of doors, probably on the east side for that general election, to get that citywide support that you need. But it has happened, and I believe it can happen again.
Right, and so we've got a pair of Republican candidates potentially squaring down on Ward 6, which is a pretty interesting turn of events over here. And perhaps that's a sign of things to come. Perhaps this higher salary that we voted in last year for mayor and council is starting to be the carrot at the end of the stick that might make it worthwhile for somebody that was, say, a business owner as opposed to a community activist to run for office, to have somebody that has signed the front side of a paycheck before help run our city. $2.4 billion budget. Well, we're going to take a quick break and more to discuss on what's happening in the city of Tucson. Coming up, you're listening to Grant Krueger on 1030 AM, The Voice, your home for local news and talk.
A mix of Grant Krueger and Matt Neely.
It's a rough mix over there, my friend. Thank you for joining us this wonderful Wednesday morning on The Morning Voice. All kinds of fun things happening in the old Pueblo over here. Since our last show, of course, we had the unfortunate passing of Congressman Raul Grijalva from CD7. And that has put in a flood of candidates also interested in that particular race. And for those that don't know and understand election rules, and I get this gets pretty complicated between city, county, state, and federal, you actually don't have to live inside of the congressional district for which you wish to run.
Correct.
This has turned into a big issue, of course, in, say, state races, right? There was a lawsuit between Vince Leeds and Justine Wadsack a couple of years ago when she won that primary and he sued her, suggesting that perhaps she didn't live in that particular legislative district 17. But state rules are way different than federal rules. Mm-hmm. And as such, there is a whole ton of out of area people that are also interested in this particular congressional seat right now. As of this morning, 13 candidates have announced their interest in the space, none of which are the big hitters yet on the Democrat Party, right? Everyone's sort of waiting with bated breath to determine whether this was going to be Regina Romero or Adelitra Grijalva, and it looks as if Mayor Romero has announced that she's not interested in that position, leaving the heir, you know, apparent to be Adelitra Grijalva, who has decided to not announce her candidacy until after her father's funeral arrangements on the 25th of this month. Now, I completely understand and respect that decision.
Sure.
But in the meantime, there is a tremendous amount of candidates lining up for this one, potentially including current Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes as well, too. Yep. So this ripple effect of changes that could possibly occur over here are shocking. Like, what would happen if we lost a board of supervisor, right? What would happen if suddenly we lost a secretary of state? Like, we get into some serious civics lessons about the replacement, you know, processes for this. And each one, of course, is different as we talk about city law versus county law, state versus federal.
Right. Where would there be special elections? Where would there be appointments to fill out a term, right? So,
yep.
And we saw that with Sylvia Lee taking over Sharon Bronson's district after Sharon retired. Is that correct? So so that was an appointment, but I don't know about Fontes. I'm sure that would be some sort of an appointment by the governor.
Right. I would assume so as well, too, that in the recent city and council vacancies, they've sort of adopted this de facto policy that will appoint you just so long as you're not running
right
the next time
around. That's a consideration that they've taken in recent passes at this, which is an interesting way of looking at it.
Right. It's not a terrible thing, but it's certainly not required by law by any means. This is just sort of a policy that both the city council and board of supervisors have taken. And we may have a vacancy on the board of supervisors as soon as Tuesday afternoon or perhaps Wednesday morning next week. Right. If Adelita does decide to take a run for this office, she's actually required at that point to step down. But there are other Democrat candidates that have put their name in for this. David Bees, Stefana Welch, Patrick Harris Sr., and there is a pile of Republicans as well, too. Right. Sort of shocking because, you know, when we think of the city council voter registration deficit, this congressional district even leans more heavily.
Well, it's a Voting Rights Act district. So it's you know, pretty much guaranteed to have a Democrat representing it. Just the way that they stack it. I mean, by law, they have to stack a couple of those districts, and that's one of them.
Right. So. The biggest name on the Republican side right now is Daniel Gutierrez Sr. Ran last time? Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so he's got some name recognition. Heck, he's probably still even got the signs in his garage. Yeah, right. So he could wheel those things right out and put them together and be ready to go for CD7 over here. But there are other names as well, too. William Bill Hunter, Carolyn Norris, Jorge Rivas, who actually had announced a gubernatorial run a couple of years ago with Christy Simone.
At St. Philip's Plaza, I remember it well.
Right,
I was there,
right. He's got a Mexican restaurant. Sammy's Mexican Grill. Yet another restaurateur stepping up for politics over here. Like, are we noticing a theme, Matt Neely? I don't know. Is there some correlation with this? I just can't say. But as well, Michael Ribeiro, Gabrielle Tapia, and Joe Wells, all Republicans, have thrown their hat into the ring for CD7. So this is actually a pretty crowded field. We're definitely going to have a primary for this one over here, and then a general election as well, too, on, I believe, September 23rd. Which is, oddly enough, not in cadence with our normal election cycle, but that's just required by statute to do
it. It's all a timing thing, right? The primary had to be about 4 months out, and then the general had to be a certain amount of time after that. So,
correct. So while we could perhaps duly criticize the city of Tucson for running an off-cycle election and that associated cost.
But this one's required.
Yeah, this one is required. This was nobody's doing. This is nothing political, left or right of center. This is just the way it shakes out that we're going to end up with an off-cycle primary and an off-cycle congressional election for a seat that hasn't been available in a couple of decades.
Right.
And will probably have ramifications running all the way through state or local politics as our people line up for this position and their vacancies are subsequently filled. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be incredibly interesting, and we'll bring you that information probably next Wednesday. We'll have an idea about Adelita's announcement and where this shakes down, and we'll make sure to get a couple of these candidates on these shows as well too. I know Mr. Gutierrez has already reached out and wants to be on this one, so I figured we'd wait to shake out what that D side looks like, and once we've got an idea and those statements of interest, we'll get some of those candidates on and bring it to our Morning Voice listeners as well, too. Other Tucson news, the Spanish Trails Motel and Hotel has burned down yet again. A third time. This is the third major fire over at Spanish Trails. Now, as the owner of the Maverick, I know a thing or two about business fires over here, right? And this one just seemingly continues to burn. At what point do we tear this building down to the ground, man?
I just think it needs to go. Unfortunately, it's sad, but it just, there are a lot of fires. There's the Greyhound Park fire. There's the Crossroads Restaurant fire. And that's the City Council of South Tucson, or Town Council, or whatever they call their entity, has addressed this in their meetings. Business owners in South, I don't know, you probably know Joey Rogers as I do, and Joey's been quite vocal about that on social media. He has a business, I can't remember the name of it. Dancing in the Streets AZ. There you go, Joey. Dancing in the Streets AZ. He's got a ballet company for kids in South Tucson. He's been very vocal about it. They've tried to, there have been fires set in the alcove of his doorway at his business. So he is invested in the subject of fires in South Tucson.
But this area of South Tucson, for those that, aren't terribly familiar with where and exactly, the locations of Tucson Greyhound Park and the Spanish Trails Motel over here off of 4th Avenue and I-10 area here, like, this is actually a really important part for redevelopment. And when the current sort of town council and now mayor, although a councilwoman at the time, Roxana Valenzuela, ran as a slate a couple of years ago, they announced their intentions that they weren't going to give in to gentrification. They weren't going to allow this to suddenly turn into high-rise condos and look like Scottsdale over here. But instead, it looks like Beirut right now in this area.
That's the problem.
This isn't even about whether we can not Scottsdale-ify this one.
Well, and Grant, I mean, now, this time, the second fire on Monday, within 24 hours, the smoke was so thick it was causing problems on I-10. It was causing visibility issues on I-10, which now is a safety hazard, right?
Right. And if we've got any hope for the economic redevelopment of South Tucson, and really a pretty visible part of town, I mean, this is what you see when you drive through Tucson on I-10, right? You see Alan Norville's giant tent that hasn't been erected in, you know, but once a year, and you see the burned out shell of what was a really cool sign for the Spanish Trail Motel Bingo. Many decades ago. But you actually see this from the freeway. This is your view of the city. For many people, this is probably the only view that they get of Tucson. And one of the reasons I think it has this sort of dirty tea perception and reputation as well, too, is that we aren't that attractive of a city from the freeway, quite frankly. Our attractive parts aren't necessarily lined up with I-10. And this might be an amazing opportunity for South Tucson to take this negative and turn it into a positive and find a way to get some new ownership into some of these very significant properties, because we're never going to have Greyhound racing again. We're never going to bring back the Spanish Trail Motel at this point.
Sadly, I mean, yes, great nostalgia with the Spanish Trail Motel. Absolutely. But it is not going to come back. They're not going to rebuild it.
Right. And so where else do you find tracts of land of this size, right? With
freeway
that kind
access,
of zoning. Yes.
Visibility.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
As a business owner, right. Location, location, location. You are at St. Philip's Plaza, major crossroads in town. It's, you know, you're like, this has a better use than a burned out hotel.
Correct. I can see the potential of where a development could happen in this area. And I urge the mayor and town council of South Tucson to really reconsider their stance on gentrification on this one, because there's a lot of opportunity there for South Tucson to turn this negative into a positive. Well, don't go anywhere. We've got lots more Tucson talk coming up on The Morning Voice when we come back after the break. And at the top of the hour, we will have Matthew Quick, owner of Bon John Chicken, talking about opening up his second location on 4th Avenue. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk.
Billy Preston out of space celebrating our two wayward astronauts, stranded astronauts, who are also out of space. Welcome home.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, always bringing you great local Tucson content at The Morning Voice every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m. We've got Lydia Aranda on Mondays, Ted Maxwell on the Engagement Hour, leader of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He had a great show yesterday you can check out with Michael Guyman and Humberto Lopez over there, the man that probably single-handedly funded the U of A football team.
Quite
this
a story,
last year.
Yes, yeah. You're right, and that, yes.
But a great story about his genesis as well, too, and everything going on with that. Ted's always got great content on the Engagement Hour. On Wednesdays, you get me, the intersection of restaurants and politics over here on The Morning Voice. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. He's going to be bringing on Shelby Shear from the Marana Parks and Recs, Delise Shepard, Director of Marketing and Programs at SACA, and Jonathan Fram from the Tucson Folk Festival. So that's tomorrow on The Morning Voice, 7 to 9. And you've got Dr. Ed Ackerley every single Friday bringing all kinds of wonders from the University of Arizona. So we were talking about candidates before the break for all these races, and Ward 3 is also heating up over here as well, too. J.L. Wittenbraker has announced her candidacy as Republican candidate.
So yep. It's official. Okay.
She has filed the paperwork as of yesterday to run for Ward 3. That is currently Kevin Dahl's seat. Those of you listeners may remember Ms. Wittenbraker's name from two recent races. She ran for mayor 2 years ago, capturing 32% of the vote. And she ran for Pima County Supervisor last year, capturing 43% of the vote as well, too. And so she's thrown her hat in the ring for Ward 3. So now for two of these three wards that are coming up, we actually have Republican candidates. In some years past, these seats went even unrun for, and it was one of the big criticisms of Shelley Kais as chair of the Pima County Republican Party was that she wasn't fielding candidates for every single race. And a couple of years ago, Dave and Betsy Smith were able to get candidates for wards 1, 2, and 4, all of which lost, though, by pretty tremendous margins, with nobody getting more than about 39% of the vote, right, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately, it's an uphill battle for these candidates one way or another, but we've got two of the three seats at least will have some semblance of our challenger. I have yet to see a Republican announce any intention into Ward 5. It's a pretty crowded Democrat primary over there. We've got Jesse Lugo announced his intention for that one, right?
Right.
And we're doing a fundraiser for him over at St. Philip's Plaza on the 31st of this month.
Oh, great.
In the evening. So if you guys want to swing by for that one, I'll bring you more news on that one next week. If you want to meet candidate Jesse Lugo on the 31st, a little happy hour at St. Philip's Plaza, come check him out over there. And of course, Ward 3 has an incumbent right now. It's Kevin Dahl. And TUSD's own Sadie Shaw has announced her intention to run against him in the Democrat primary. And so he's actually going to get primary.
So this is interesting, right?
Yep.
Now you have a... It's this, Grant, it's part of the same dynamic we saw in the 414 election, where you do have the farther left fringe of the party that is, or whatever, the farther left part of the party that is challenging the mayor and council kind of groupthink.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so it'll be interesting to see how this primary shakes out, because this is something that they're not used to having to you know, have so many challenges to the incumbency as well, too. The Grijalva regime, as some people like to call it, have been pretty good at protecting their candidates and making sure that they skate through unchallenged so that they've got the financial strength to just absolutely hammer their opponents on a citywide race. And there's going to be a little bit of a challenge over there in Ward 3. So 5 is looking kind of spicy on a Democrat primary. We've got a Democrat primary in 3 over there as well, too.
You bet.
And, you know, 6 as well. So, like, this is
so actually... in 6 and in 5, you're seeing, on the Democratic side, you're seeing, like, people that are maybe more closely aligned with the mayor in each of those races, countering, again, maybe in Ward 5, another maybe more of a moderate Democrat in Jesse Lugo. Right?
Yes.
And the same thing, in the same kind of dynamic going on in Ward 6.
Yeah, so interesting to see, like, some schisms over right. here in a party that was pretty unified for most of this last decade, and certainly vote in lockstep, as we've talked about in this show before, mayor and council votes pretty much being a near unanimous decision every single time, and suddenly there's a bit of a schism here in the party.
Well, I'll tell you, Grant, by definition, there's going to be two of the council members are going to be new, because Ward 6, Karen Ulick, has been kind of what she wants to call it, a caretaker or, you know, placeholder or whatever. As we discussed earlier, she vowed that she would not run again. So she's been filling out Kozacik's term. So there will be a new council member in Ward 6. There will be a new council member in Ward 5, because Richard Fimbres is not running for re-election. So you're already... by definition, you're going to have two new faces on the city council.
Right. And so that, combined with the fact that these are now higher salaries as well,
sure.
too, I mean, that has to play into it, right? Mm-hmm. The previous salary, of course, for city council was $24,000 a year, and it's now nearly four times that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that does make a decision, right? You have to sit back and think to yourself, hey, do I want to take this position and all the stress and all the tearing through my private life and all of my decisions criticized by people like me over the radio every single day,
that's true.
All for the salary of the assistant shift manager of a Wendy's,
right.
or, you know, like, now that this is close to a six-figure salary, this is, you know, something to think about. Like, this could actually be a career replacement
car,
for somebody.
You know, yeah, the whole bit. Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, having to be either independently wealthy or some sort of, you know, retired community
or
activist.
Run a second job. Like,
right. Which is what's happened so often.
Done,
I mean,
right?
You know, when we've got the mayor working, you know, for the Center for Biological Diversity and city council people taking other jobs as well too, right. to help make ends meet. Like, I'm not knocking it. You're making 24 grand a year. Like, I can't expect you to live off of that.
Councilmember Cunningham was a teacher, and I think he may have given up that job, and Nikki Lee had a second job, and so it's a commonplace thing.
It's a crowded field here for sure. And these are going to be the solutions that Mayor Romero was asking for at the top of the hour. I was reminiscing about how she had asked for the business community to step up and say, well, if 414 isn't the solution, tell me what is, right? And this is part of it, is people stepping up and running for office to be part of the decision-making team that ultimately, you know, make these choices. It's easy to sit back and say, hey, please just charge for the bus, right? I we all know that there's somewhere between $10 and $13 million right there in the city budget. Right. That alone would balance the budget for this year.
Yeah, I've got some. So part of the defense that the council offered up about Prop 414 was, yeah, we know it's a $2.4 billion, but really only $750 million of it is discretionary that we can actually direct. The rest of it is pass-through grants. Okay, then all of a sudden I'm like, the light bulb goes off in my head, like, well, that makes the $15 million bucks a year you're spending for free bus rides, that makes that a much, much bigger discretionary portion of what you're saying you can control. That makes it a much bigger sin in my book. All of a sudden it's like, well, that makes the free bus fares look much worse.
No, understood. It's a much bigger percentage of your overall budget there when two-thirds of this $2.4 billion are essentially things you can't control in some capacity. And I can understand that argument.
Sure.
That's not unfair. And you can do anything with statistics, right? I always joke that 62% of all statistics are made up on the spot. And, you know, like...
I thought it was 67, but...
Sorry about that.
why should we quibble? Yeah.
Correct. But ultimately, like, some changes have to happen here in the city of Tucson for us to move forward. It's clear that what we have isn't working over here. And yesterday in the chamber meeting when they were discussing the budget, the mayor was saying, well, since the people didn't vote for any more public security, you know, we need to make these following decisions. And I don't think that was a fair statement as well, too. People didn't vote against more safety or security. They voted against this bloated package that included some public safety funds over there, but also included a tremendous tax hike and a tremendous slush fund for the city as well, too.
And it's on top of an endless train of every time there's a problem, well, we'll just go to the voters for more money.
Correct.
And then the voters are like, well, wait a minute. You know, when I go to the store, my at the checkout counter, I can't believe what I'm paying every week for groceries. And it's like, and you're going to increase other costs of taxable goods on me now. And so what you have, what you wind up with is we said yes to these six or eight different things that cost us more money. We said yes to all of them. Where does the rubber meet the road? Where do you have to go back as a body and say, we need to solve this for our constituents? The mayor and the council people, when they talk about ward-only elections, they say, well, look, you know, we represent all of Tucson, so therefore it's we justify that all Tucsonans vote count to elect us, not just in our individual ward. Well, you do, you know, go back to that mantra. You do represent all Tucsonans. For you, Grant, for Josh, who's been on the show a lot, for Monica Carlson, who was on the previous show a lot, for the folks from the, you know, you go in, your choice is, how do I continue business today that this big piece of equipment that I depend upon every day was either stolen or vandalized? Okay, those are the decisions you have to make. And for the mayor to come out and say, well, you need to tell us how to fix it. A lot of business owners out there, a lot of business owners are like, their big decision is, how do I stay in business, right? How do I stay in business with all of these things that, you know, can and should, that are illegal, that are happening to me, that can and should be dealt with. And this is considered an extra. This is considered, the city says, hey, we're going to have an election for this extra item, which we call this luxury, that we call maybe a little bit more policing.
Well, one of the ways I think business owners are going to tell the city to fix it is going to be through lawsuits filed through Proposition 312. And I think that's where we can take a quick break over here. Maybe we'll break down what's about to happen on Proposition 312 when we come back to The Morning Voice. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 10:30 a.m. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. We're talking solutions over here for the city of Tucson after their council meeting last night. night. There wasn't a whole lot of solutions out there offered, quite frankly, by the call to the audience. And maybe that's something we need to change as well, too. Mayor and council can't just continue to get accolades by their chosen few that love them for the social policies that they put forth over here. Perhaps we need to actually have a voice, not just the morning voice, but an evening voice in these particular calls to council. Again, I've offered to break bread with them, to have some solutions, to put together a team of business owners that would love, absolutely love the opportunity to sit down with mayor and council and have some really agreeable discussions about potential solutions and how to make things better. If we don't, the business owners are going to voice their displeasure by what's going on with lawsuits based on Proposition 312. For those that are keeping score, over here, that is the property tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws. A true mouthful over there, right? I'll let you take another swig of your morning coffee while you process that one. But ultimately, that means if the city isn't doing its job with respect to enforcement of current laws, you may be able to file a lawsuit to essentially ask for a rebate limited to whatever the amount of property taxes that you paid to the city. This could pay for fencing. This could pay for cameras. It could pay for additional lighting. It could pay for property cleanup with graffiti and whatnot. As I was struggling to park downtown last week to check out, you know, this particular property, and I drove down a couple alleyways and whatnot, there's some pretty rough parts of directly behind Congress. Like, I'm not talking about, oh, I went five blocks off the beaten path somewhere. I'm saying, like, right off our shining star over here, I found five, I count them, at five piles of human feces alone while I was looking for parking spots, against some of these buildings. Walls and a tremendous amount of graffiti as well too. And this is like the area where we expect people to come and enjoy Tucson's city of gastronomy, sure. Our America's best Mexican food. This is our shining star of those five blocks of Congress from basically like Fifth, you know, all the way down to about Stone, mm-hmm. where we expect there to be development. Mm-hmm. This isn't like running off a street somewhere on Scott or, you know, one of these, you know, side streets somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, this is our main drag and it's getting beaten up. If you walk through downtown in the middle of the day, most of the businesses aren't open in the day. I walk by Pascaria, and they're not open in the day on the weekdays. Oban's not open in the day on the weekdays, right? The Urban Pita place that was right there is closed due to a flood. Hi-Fi's gone out of business. Sure. Outside of a few of the coffee shops that are there and doing a somewhat reasonable trade, the grand majority of the restaurants in downtown are not only not open in the day, but often boarded, fenced, or gated up in some way, shape, or form that kind of says, stay the heck out. You know, like, stay off of our property. And it isn't going to be long before those businesses start to ask the city to pay for some of their fencing for not doing their job to protect them from these sort of unhoused incursions that I think are happening in downtown.
So I wonder if the increased, because I know the Downtown Tucson Partnership pays for increased patrols. I wonder if those patrols, what I'm trying to ask, Grant, is do the patrols, are they limited tonight? And does the opening of businesses, is it correlated to when the extra patrols are going around?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And I don't know the answer to that one, Matt. I do see the presence of DTP and the purple sort of side-by-sides. They've got a couple of those that ride around and do pick up some of the trash. But this is, I think, a bigger job than what they can handle. And you may be right. Maybe this is just happening in the evening time to clear ways for what is a pretty substantial nightclub trade downtown. Yeah. Yeah. But hasn't always been as successful of restaurants.
And you've talked about it before, you know, on your dinner tab or your dining tab, if there's alcohol on it, it changes the profit. It changes the break-even point for a restaurant. And maybe the restaurants have figured, you know, people are coming and having an iced tea with their $15 lunch. And they know that, and the restaurants maybe know that they have better margins if people are more likely in the evening to have a drink, a beer or a mixed drink with their dinner.
It also has to do with the timing, Matt, right? A full service restaurant meal might take, even in a reasonably quick location, might take an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes or so. Like, we use a formula for this one, like a two top takes 90 minutes and a four top takes 2 hours and a 10 top takes 3 hours to turn. And these are the standard formulas for a, you know, run of the mill full service restaurant dining processes and how we plan reservations and spaces. And so maybe business people just don't have an hour and a half or 2 hours to spend on lunch. And as such, you might go to a quick service thing. You see business at the Baggins. You saw business at the Brugger's that was there. Even Street Taco and Beer downtown gets a certain trade. But mostly, again, from jury duty and the unfortunate souls being processed in the court systems, and that proximity to the courthouse building drives this quick service, but it doesn't necessarily make full service restaurants work. And I certainly saw an awful lot of fencing and bars and articulating, you know, rolling shutter type things that were sort of saying, stay the heck out, and wasn't exactly the inviting daytime experience that you may wish to have for downtown tourists. It was kind of eye-opening for me as somebody that mostly only spends my time at night down there because I'm there to experience dining or a show at the Rialto or at the Fox. And so a really interesting change of pace of what that daytime face looks like downtown, and certainly something to take note of as we think about what Proposition 3112 may mean for the city of Tucson as we think about how they're going to potentially address some of their codes to not be subject to these lawsuits. But we're going to take a quick break over here. When we come back after the top of the hour over here, we're going to break down local restaurant news. We got some openings, we got some closings, and we've got Matt Quick coming up. He's the owner of Bon John Chicken, opening up their second location. Another hour of The Morning Voice. When we come back after the break, you're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome back to the second hour of The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. And in Food for Thought today, we're going to bring you some restaurant news over here. It's not just politics happening in Tucson. Restaurant opening and closures always dominate the news cycle when we talk about the hospitality business. It's kind of an unfortunate part of this because I'd like to discuss so many other cool things that people are doing, events or specials or award-winning dishes. But if it bleeds, it leads, as they say in the news business over here. And certainly restaurant openings and closures dominate that particular news cycle. To begin with, we've got Mama's Pizza, right, in Oro Valley announcing its closure. And for those that are listeners of both The Morning Voice and our predecessor, Jump in Tucson, we've had Joe Spina, owner of Mama's, here on the show before. And that happened to be a different ownership group of that location. Right. He's got two other Mama's locations, both of which are still alive and well. But a family member was running this particular location of Mama's, which was locked out by its landlord on the 13th of March.
The one at Oracle and McGee.
Yes. So generally speaking, restaurants, when they close, it ends pretty ugly, right? This is a landlord's lien. And as we've discussed, if you don't pay your rent inside of 5 calendar days, they can change those locks on you and confiscate all of your equipment, according to Arizona law, to take it to recoup their losses. And so restaurants are often snuffed out somewhat quickly and violently. In many cases, as we've discussed on the show too, it happens without the employees' knowledge as well too. Perhaps they didn't realize of the financial wherewithal of the establishment. Only 2 or 3 percentage points on cost of goods sold and labor defines whether a restaurant is profitable or not. And often restaurants can't exactly let their staff know that they're closing as well too at a certain date in the future because they would leave for greener pastures much more quickly, and then you wouldn't have any staff. So unfortunate to the staff of that particular Mama's Pizza, there happens to be 2 other locations owned by the Spina family. So please do go out and visit those establishments. Spend your money over there and help them out. They're great local operators. We'd love to have Joe back on the show sometime and talk about that one. As well, too, the announcement that Oasis Raspados and Fruit Cones is closing on South 12th Avenue. A really unfortunate fact as well, too. Business that's been around in Tucson for 41 years. That's an awful long time. And it's pretty sad to think that such an establishment didn't make it after literally 4 decades. But it's also a pretty good run in the restaurant business as well, too. Nothing to be sad about on that one, but that business at 4126 South 12th Avenue has announced its closure this week. Speaking of other closures, Caruso's, the beloved Italian restaurant on 4th Avenue, has got a temporary closure due to storm damage last year. Another hit here for places on 4th Avenue, huh, Matt?
An old establishment, an old building, and I guess they, you know, with all the wind and rain we've had lately, hopefully they can get that wrapped up quickly.
Well, as we've said before, like old restaurant buildings don't exactly age like a fine Bordeaux over here, right?
Ask the folks at La Cave's on sixth or fourth, I guess it was.
Yes, that was quite a challenge if you recall.
The original location.
Sure, and so some of these old buildings are grandfathered in and grandfathered in and grandfathered in, and then eventually some of the infrastructure just can't hold up over there. And a neat historic location that this is their second hit of storm damage in the last 2 years as well, as their sign was absolutely torpedoed last year.
Good point.
And Jude Cook from the Cook & Company, the sign makers company, a great, great place, by the way. Jude and Monica run a great business called the Ignite Sign Museum on Olson Avenue.
Very fun to go to.
But they're also the genesis of repairs of pretty much all the cool old neon signs that you know of and love in Tucson, that Miracle Mile District and that cool Tucson cactus sign that's on Oracle Road as well, too.
The swimmer diving into the pool on, Stone.
Stone, I believe that one as well, too. These guys have basically repaired all those signs. And just last year, there was significant storm damage to Caruso's historic sign on 4th Avenue over there. And they repaired that and got it all back and running again. And everything was great. And now the roof got all kinds of structural damage. And so they're going to be closed for an unknown amount of time over here.
They were hoping it would be a quick turn. But as you know, once they start peeling layers back, all of a sudden they'll find other things, underlying things that weren't evident when they first looked it over.
Of course, and when you bring in the government officials to take a look at this, and the fire department comes in, and the city building inspectors come in and whatnot, and they start going, hey, wait a minute over there, that wasn't to code, and this isn't up to 2025 standards, and well, let's look at your fire suppression and sprinklers over here, and pretty soon you've got a rat's nest, and many, many employees could potentially lose their jobs, and this is really heartbreaking for a restaurant in the middle of season, too.
Yeah, right.
It would be one thing if this happened to you in July.
You've spoken about this at length, right? Yeah,
there's an inequitable distribution of sales in Tucson, and February and March is definitely part of that spike, right? That's the peak and your peaks and valleys. And so to go out during that particular time is a really, really unfortunate thing for Caruso's. And so we wish them and their staff a tremendous amount of success of navigating that difficult, difficult task of getting reopened again, because they really are going to need it. If they miss this month of season over here, this could set them back financially years. Like, no joke, Matt. You need to squirrel your nuts before the summertime comes and be prepared financially for that downturn in business that just happens in the very cyclical restaurant industry in Southern Arizona. Now, on a positive front, there are a couple of openings announced over just the last couple of weeks. One happened right next to home for me in St. Philip's Plaza. Wren Bakery has announced its opening in the last 2 weeks. Wren has two locations, and it sort of confused a lot of folks over these last couple of years. There's the original Wren coffee shop that's located in the building almost immediately adjacent to Campbell Avenue in St. Philip's Plaza, southeast corner of River and Campbell. So it's not in the plaza where Union and Reforma and Proof are, but immediately adjacent to that, kind of by where F45 is and Yoga Pod is right now.
Well,
and Wren has been there for a number of years. They took over a failed ice cream shop space in the middle of St. Philip's Plaza, in the plaza adjacent to Reforma, but also named it Wren. And so that created a lot of confusion, I think, for their guests and our guests, because there were two Wrens and they had different hours and slightly different concepts, even though it was the same owner. And it really created a lot of confusion when it was like, hey, meet me at Wren. And then, hey, which one and where? And so a location has finally popped up in the plaza. They did a big tenant improvement, and they moved their baking operations immediately adjacent to their coffee spot. So now there is a bakery by Wren and a Wren coffee shop, and they're actually right next to each other, which should make the efficiencies of running the business substantially improved as well, too. And so they're already open for business. They got that open in just the last week and a half. So do go check those guys out, 4340 North Campbell. That is Bakery by Wren. They've got pies and cakes to order, and a lot of neat things going over there out of their bakery at Wren. And they happen to be our neighbors in St. Philip's Plaza, so we wish them a tremendous amount of success as well, too. And then an opening downtown has been announced at 410 North Toole Avenue. Opening up this weekend is going to be Vertigo Wines, and it's a wine tasting room where they'll offer you wine by the barrel. And so this one's got a little bit of love from Rio Nuevo on this deal, but the former owners of Isabella's Ice Cream. You might remember Crystal and Dominic Johnson's from Isabella's on 4th Avenue. For a while, they were located next to where Hermano's was, actually, which also has closed.
And before that, weren't they at Rincon? I believe briefly there at Rincon Market.
Yes, sir.
Or whatever Rincon was at the time.
Yep, and the product was offered over there at Rincon. And then they took over for a while for the Hub Ice Cream Factory. They took Isabella's and sort of merged it with Hub.
Oh.
The Isabella's sort of old-time ice cream truck became the Hub old-time ice cream truck, and they were using it for events. And she became the general manager of the Hub Ice Cream Factory, which was located on the south side of Congress, immediately across from the Hub restaurant. And they're going to open up a wine tasting room called Vertigo Wines at 410 North Toole Avenue. So this Saturday, March 22nd, will be their grand opening over here. And they're going to run limited hours for the first couple of weeks, but they're expected. It's a beautiful looking space right now. I've got a chance to peek in the windows, and they're offering a wine tasting by the barrel while they're actually pouring wines directly out of barrels and doing some of their own blending over here as well, too. And so that should be a neat addition into downtown. And it always makes me happy when we can talk about restaurant openings as opposed to restaurant closings. Amen. Over here on the Morning Voice. Speaking of restaurants, we're going to have a little Morning Voice meet and greet tomorrow at Bamboo View Restaurant, located at 7018 East Golf Links, 5:30 to 7. You can come meet all the hosts of the Morning Voice. So if you find me disagreeable or hate some of the political positions I take and want to throw an egg roll at me, please come down to the Bamboo View Restaurant, where you should be able to meet both Miss Lydia Aranda, Ted Maxwell, myself, Grant Kruger, Tom Moulton, and Ed Ackerley. My goodness, we'll all be in the same room. I didn't think that was allowed, sort of like the president and the vice president.
We had to get an exception. Right. We had to get a waiver on the normal contractual obligation.
Right, the KVOI insurance right. over there, right?
And actually, I believe Lydia said she would not be able to make it. But yeah, it's a southwest corner golf links and call Bamboo View Restaurant, 5:30 to 7 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, so come check us out over there if you want to meet in person, you know, imbibe in a cocktail, or just share about ways that we can all work together to make Tucson a better place. I am all about it. Now, speaking about making Tucson a better place, coming up after the break, we're going to bring on local business owner Matt Quick. Matt has opened up Banchan Chicken on the east side on Tanga Verde, and you know I'm a big fan of helping make Tanga Verde great again, and he's announced that he's going to open up a second location on 4th Avenue, and so we've got a multi-unit restaurant tour coming up making big local investments. Mr. Matthew Quick from Banchan Chicken coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we're talking all things about people making a difference here in the city of Tucson, right? One of the ways we can make changes is by investing in the city, by setting up our roots, by building our businesses and raising our families here. And I've got somebody live in the KVUI studios that's doing just that right now. Matt Quick from Banchan Chicken. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Grant. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
For those that don't know, Matt's got a second location at Banchan coming up over here. He's got one on Tanga Verde, 6310 East Tanga Verde, and he's opening up one on 4th Avenue as well, too.
Yes, we actually opened about a month ago, so it's been a blur, but it's been exciting to introduce Banchan and Korean fried chicken to the city of Tucson.
So why don't you break it down for us how you got your start in the restaurant business over here?
Well, I've been working in the service industry essentially my whole working career. You know, my first job was when I was 15 at McDonald's, and then from there, bagging groceries, being a bellman at a hotel, you know, just all sorts of service industry jobs. And I went and got my business degree, but just, you know, the service industry is what I was.
Where did you get your business degree from? Which university?
Oh, I can't say it on the air, you know.
Is this Arizona State? Can we not say it?
It might be, you know, it might be the one up north, yeah.
We won't talk about that one over here then, but that's fine. Arizona A&M or something, I believe they call that one over here.
Yeah.
That's just fine. No judgment over here in the 520. Very fine institution. And quite frankly, seeing what Michael Crow has done with Tempe over there is really a lesson that we should all learn from here in Tucson, for a way to take what was kind of a downtrodden area of Tempe and turn it into a spot where there's tech headquarters and lots of great restaurants and bars too.
Yeah. And it was, I think I appreciate Tucson more, having gotten out. You know, I grew up here, but those, you know, I went to ASU, so it took me 6 years to graduate, you know, so those 6 years up there, Definitely, I think I appreciate Tucson more and kind of the opportunities here. And then, but yeah, when I graduated, you know, I was looking at getting a job in the business field, but everything just felt like that movie Office Space. And so my parents wanted to go in on a franchise, and they reached out to me and they said, Matt, I know you're kind of out of the service industry, but you want to help us open something? And so I agreed to, and we opened our first Papa John's in the end of 2008.
Which is pretty good timing, right? Because Papa John's has sort of had a lot of growth between 2008 and now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's taught me to, you know, adapt. You know, we've had good runs and bad runs. And so it's, I don't think that I Bonchon would happen if I hadn't had that time kind of learning the ropes and with Papa John's.
So how many years did you run Papa John's?
We're going on 16 now.
So you're still currently a franchisee right now, or your family?
Yeah. Yeah. We have three locations in town. So yeah, still doing that. My folks are, they kind of help on the back end, you know, doing all the boring payroll office stuff. And I get to be in there making pizzas and working with the teams. And, you know, we grew the three locations, so I'm not able to be in there as much. It's kind of challenged to, you know, when you go from one location to multiple, as you know, like it's a challenge.
Sure, of course. Anybody can micromanage one location. I think you could probably will a restaurant into existence if you spent 80 to 100 hours a week there, right? And worked incredibly hard, eliminating managerial labor and reducing hourly labor and keeping an eye on things. You could probably make that work. However, that same skill set doesn't apply when you go to location number two. Or number three, you just don't have another 80 hours a week to pull off, right? And this is where it ends up devastating lives and families, and why there's such a high divorce, you know, rate in our industry as well, too, is because people try that same management style with one location when they get to their second or third. And that same skill set just doesn't apply.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I spent 100 hours a week at our first location, and I try, and we're doing good. You know, we had great customer service, and you can't do that to multiple locations because you can't be three places at once.
Without a doubt. So give me the genesis on Bonchon. Like, you've got three Papa John's. Why wouldn't you just open up Papa John's number four or number five or number 10? Like, why wouldn't the goal just be to populate your portfolio with a whole bunch of Papa John's?
Well, like I said, I grew up in Tucson. I love Tucson. But there was always another Papa John's owner in town. You know, there's another company that owns the other like eight locations in town. So we were kind of the small fish. And those owners were always from out of state. And so they didn't really understand Tucson. They didn't really want to do anything too locally, or, you know, so I just got a little frustrated and was thinking about doing something else. You know, what could I do where I'd be the only operator in town? And literally just read about Korean fried chicken in a magazine on a flight and said, let's look into this. And so me and my wife, we tried it and got obsessed with it and said, let's bring it to Tucson.
Which is pretty neat. I think it's always one of the downsides, of course, of the franchisees is that you're beholden to this national level formula, right? What works in New York must be applied to Tucson. What works in Seattle must be applied to Tucson. This has to also be your menu in Omaha, Nebraska. And in some cases, that just doesn't work so well. It's what makes the sole proprietorship so possible to do. It's one of the few entrepreneurial things where a sole proprietor could actually compete against the chains and in some cases be successful because you can custom tailor your menu to and your location to like the local tastes. So where did you come up with the idea for the first location? Like, what drove you to Tanga Verde specifically?
I think I was a little biased. I grew up on the east side and, you know, we didn't know how the community was going to react to Korean fried chicken, to Bonchon. You know, I never heard of Bonchon until I read about it. And so we wanted something that had like a cheaper rent, you know, was kind of like on the more safe side. And so we found this space over on the east side, you know, Tanga Verde and Pima. And it's a goofy intersection, but, you know, the cost of the rent was affordable. You know, we didn't have a lot of capital. And so it just fit with kind of the risk we were taking.
So this location, for those that don't know, happens to be on Tanga Verde, basically where the Cork is, right? Kind of shoehorned between the Cork and what used to be the Saddlehorn Saloon, now called Uncorked as well, too. And there's a strip mall in that location. Now, you took the space that was formerly a barbecue restaurant?
No. So it used to be a Chewy's, you know, that whole pad?
Yep. Yeah, the pad.
And then they
was.
Split it up into three spaces. And we went into the space that was in the middle that nothing had ever been in since the Chewy's was there. So it was a total blank slate when we went in. So,
which is good and bad, because that can be a little more expensive, as we talked about on this show too. Like, sometimes crawling into the bones of another operator allows you to have a grease trap. It allows you to have a hood. And when you don't have that kind of stuff, you get to build it from scratch.
Oh, I learned that lesson. I thought, this is a blank slate. You could do whatever and it was so expensive. It was just, and having to put all the plumbing, hood system, it was a mistake that I learned from, what to look for our second location, which was an existing restaurant, so it had all the guts in it.
Right. These are huge, huge costs if the tenant puts them into the space. And in fact, it's generally atypical that a tenant would invest that much into a space that you don't own. The analogy I always use is it's like putting in new granite countertops or cabinets into an apartment that you're renting. Right? You just wouldn't do that. But yet we, as business owners, as restaurateurs, we're seemingly signing up to do that so regularly. It makes absolutely no sense to me. And it's no wonder that so many of these businesses end up failing, because you've got a big debt service piece just to cover that tenant improvement.
Oh, 100%.
And so when did the Banchan open up at 6310 Tanga Verde?
We opened at the end of May last year.
So you opened basically at the start of summer, like the absolute worst time of the entire season. I mean, literally restaurant season ends in Tucson right about May 20th, right? Right after graduation from the University of Arizona and all the high school graduations and Mother's Day wrap up, right? You hit Memorial Day and everybody is hightailing it out of the old Pueblo. And that was the time you took to open.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah, it was, we felt it right off the bat.
Yeah, it had to, even the excitement of a new restaurant and that positive press can be tough to buoy a June, July, and August summertime, in spite of the visibility of the location, no?
Yeah, I mean, we opened really strong out the gates. There was a lot of online publications that picked up that we were open, and so that first 2 weeks were insanely busy, almost like overwhelmingly busy, and then after that it just was you felt the summer, and I heard from a lot of food vendors, a lot of other restaurants, that it was one of the worst summers that they've seen in a long time here in Tucson.
Without a doubt, this was the toughest summer we had since probably COVID, because many of the last three summers were sort of buoyed by a couple of unique factors. One was government funny money, right? There was all kinds of tax rebates and PPPs and various credits and things given out to people, and incredibly high unemployment. And two, international travel was completely clipped. The idea that people would leave the United States or even possibly leave the state of Arizona also didn't happen. So a lot of people stuck around the old Pueblo. And last year was the first time that people could legitimately leave. Well, we've got a couple more segments with Matt Quitt coming up. He's got a location they just opened up on 4th Avenue, and we're going to talk about business on the avenue and how that's going. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matthew Quick from Banchan Chicken on 1030 AM The Voice. Your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we're joined live in the KVOI studios with another segment with Matt Quick, the owner of Banchan Chicken. Matt, welcome back.
Hey, it feels good to be back.
So break down Korean chicken for me over here. What differentiates this product? Chicken's been a really in category in the quick service restaurant space, right? The chicken sandwich wars with the chains. You see these chicken tender concepts and drive-thrus with huge lines. What makes Banchan special?
Korean chicken specifically, it's double fried. And you would think that makes it really greasy or heavy, but actually it's really light and crunchy, so it uses cold batter, and it's almost kind of like flash fried when you drop it in, and that cold batter hitting the oil gives it a real crunchy shell, real hard shell, while still being juicy and tender on the inside. And then you let it sit for a little bit, you take it out of the fryer, let it sit, and then you drop it again, and that just gives it that extra crunch to it. Bonchon specifically, it started off as a sauce company in Korea. You know, the founder was really passionate about sauces. You know, that was his thing. And so it grew to restaurants after that. But so we actually hand brush our sauces on each wing, each drumstick, each strip, because they're so, you know, concentrated with flavor. You know, they're not dipping sauces. Like, we literally have paintbrushes that we brush on each one. So it just gives that that kind of intense flavor when you bite into it. You know, you get that crunch and then also that flavor that comes with it.
Sounds great. What kind of sauces do you guys use over there at Bonchon then?
The original ones that the founder, you know, put his life's work into is soy garlic and then spicy. And then it's grown to a Korean barbecue sauce and then a yangnyeom sauce. And that spicy sauce is really spicy. I thought I had a high spice tolerance growing up in Tucson, but I have to kill it with some coleslaw to tone it down some.
Understood, but a lot of listeners out there love their spices as yeah. well, too. So I'd imagine this one is probably yeah, pretty hot.
I respect anyone that comes in there and just can, you know, kill a plate of spicy wings or strips.
So you've chosen 4th Avenue now for your second location, right? And there's been some pretty big closures on 4th Avenue in the last couple of years. We've talked on the show about how maybe 4th Avenue has actually suffered with downtown and university's growth. Is it sort of just a pass-through for streetcar passengers from the university? What drove you to 4th Avenue specifically?
Well, again, I learned my lesson from the first location where second-gen space, an already existing restaurant from before, definitely helps. And it's the old ATL wing space. So that was one thing. And then, you know, having grown up in Tucson, you know, 4th Avenue was, you know, the happening place. But, you know, I'm not 22 anymore. I'm 41. So it has changed a lot since I was younger. And like you said, I think that's exactly it. I think downtown has taken a lot of the nightlife away. But it is cool being close to the university. A lot of students work for us. We see them passing through. We even have a little nook in our restaurant where they can, you know, plug in their laptop and do their homework, do their papers. So I think we just wanted to be close to the west side of town as well that's growing and by the university.
And so that happens to be a former gas station location, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We have the roll-up garage door still there.
I've got some furniture actually in a Proof restaurant that came from the predecessor to ATL Wings as well, too. Talking about recycling and repurposing yeah. restaurant equipment over here. It all kind of works together in one big cyclical flow, right?
That's cool.
How that goes.
Yeah.
But it's certainly sage restaurant advice to come into a space that had housed a restaurant because you've got some of that infrastructure as well, too. So it was probably easier for you to open up, no?
Oh, yeah. And it's cool because there was already a bar in there. So now we're able to offer you know, more beer selections, expand our soju offerings and even include some, you know, Korean wine, some other like interesting, unique Korean liqueurs, you know. So it's been cool to add that element to the business to have more of a you know, our Tanque Verde location is really small. So it's more takeout. But this 4th Avenue location has more seating. We have TVs in there. So it's a great spot to come and watch the game and just hang out.
What have you done so far to attract university students? Because obviously the demographics at being at 4th Avenue and University is tremendously different than being at 6310 East Tanque Verde at Tanque Verde and Pima over there.
Yeah, we offer a discount to all the students and faculty from the university. And we have, like I said, more of a hangout spot. You know, like I said, we made sure to have all the seating at the bar have little plugs, outlets, you know, so they can charge their phones. So, you know, a lot of them are passing through on their way from class to where they live. So a lot of them will just stop in and eat. And like I said, even bust out their laptop and start working on assignments. So and I think just being at that corner, just them seeing us, you know, created a lot of buzz for the student community. And then just hiring students, you know, they all talk to each other. And so it's kind of grown organically from there.
No, it's got to be helpful to be close to your labor force. I talk a lot about some of the bedroom communities in North Oro Valley or Marana or even Saurita where they struggle to have full service restaurants. And part of the reason is that we need staff. And where do the staff come from? They don't necessarily live in Oro Valley or Saurita if they're working in a restaurant. But when you're down by the university, you've got an untapped source of new students every single year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're great kids, you know, and they bring a lot of energy to the restaurant. They just, you got to make sure that they get their spring breaks off, their summer breaks off. So, but yeah, no, it's been fun to work alongside them.
Without a doubt. Do you have plans for other locations? If Banchan continues to be successful, would you continue to expand the concept?
I think so. I think right now we're just trying to get these two off the ground. But yeah, me and my wife, you know, my wife's a big part of it. You know, she, in fact, she's there frying the chicken right now. You know, she's plays a big role in it. I think we're open to it if we find, like I said, I've learned that a lot of it is the space you find. You know, if you find another second gen space that is in an area that's maybe far away from our existing locations, then, you know, we might be open to the idea, or maybe even downsize and go into like a food truck or food hall, or, you know, so there's a lot of flexibility with it.
How many employees do you guys have right now, Matt?
At the Banchan, we probably have like 25, and then with the Papa John's, probably close to 30 or so, 35.
Right, so that's like 55 team members, like right there to manage. That's no easy feat.
No. I mean, I have great managers, and I think that's the key. It's just finding good people to work alongside you, and just, you know, I'm blown away by the hard work they do and keeping things going. So it's finding good managers, good help is amazing.
No, certainly we're in the people business. And I think that sometimes this is forgotten about, just the economic impact that a restaurant can have on the community, right? With an average profit margin of between 2% and 6%, let's say, that means that, you know, 94 to 98% of what comes in the front door goes out the back that we're spending, both on wages, right, to local individuals that are working for us, and to all the local purveyors as well, too, as we redistribute that money buying chicken or vegetables and produce or, you know, beverages, alcohol, whatever it might be. Almost all of it that comes in the front door goes right out the back to the community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's very unforgiving if you're not on top of running an efficient business. Yeah.
Without a doubt. We talk about a lot of restaurant openings on this show. And unfortunately, it also gives us the opportunity to talk about a lot of closures. Have you ever had to close a Papa John's location?
Yeah, we had to close our one over on St. Mary's and like Silver Bell area. It just was a slow store. And then there was great people in that area, but we just kept getting our windows broken in. It was kind of a rough spot.
Well, this goes into that what we discussed on the previous hour on the show, the Proposition 312, this you know, property tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws that passed last year. It's going to give business owners the opportunity to put some of the onus on the city to do their job and enforce the laws that are already on the books, because some of these safety issues really prevent you from continuing to operate your business in locations like that. And it's truly unfortunate, not just for the employees, but for the people of that community as well, too, that want to have lots of local dining options. Even these franchises, again, as we're discussing, are locally owned by local people that are raising their families over here as well, too.
Yeah, 100%.
So let's take a quick break. We got one more segment coming up with Matthew Quick. He's opened up his second Banchan Chicken over here. Maybe he'll have some new ones coming up. You're listening to Matt Quick and Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Hey, we're talking all things chicken over here on The Morning Voice. You're listening to Grant Kruger, and we've got Matt Quick, owner of Banchan Chicken, over here for a final segment here on The Morning Voice. He's just opened up his second location on 4th Avenue. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you.
Hey, so you got your wife over there working right now. You said she's frying the chicken as we speak, getting ready for that double fried Korean chicken. How's it like being married and being in the restaurant business? How do you balance that one?
Oh, it's hard, but it's, if you have a good partner, that is willing to, that knows it's not easy, you know, that is like her, like she's in there, getting everything going, frying the chicken. And I joke, you know, I've been doing, you know, operating restaurants 16 years. She actually left her office job she had been with to kind of help with the Banchan. And I joke that in the 8 months that we've been doing it, she's already better at running restaurants than I am, because she's
Well, those that can't do teach, as we say, right? So makes a lot of sense here.
Yeah. They actually, I like to talk. You know, I think I'm more in love with hospitality. I love the idea of hospitality even more so than the restaurant aspect. So they kind of kick me out of the kitchen because I just talk to all the, the team members, and they put me in the lobby where I talk. I just ramble to the guests and stuff. So it's a good dynamic, you know?
Yeah, hey, aces in their places, as they say, right? There's front of house people and there's back of house people.
Yeah.
Well, I find it interesting. I think with Korean, some of this Korean, we'll call it fast food or comfort food, the crunch is really emphasized because there's the Korean hot dog place that they're like corn dogs, but they have these real thick, crunchy toppings on them. And I see a theme here with the chicken where you double fry it for extra crunchiness.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The two-hand corn dogs, my kids love those. And, yeah, they're crunchy. Yeah, so I don't know if it's just what they like, or whether they're just crunchy items.
Well, it must have been pretty successful for you to already have decided to launch a second location, right? Because you went through what you said was kind of a rough summer, and I think it really was the roughest summer we've had in the restaurant business since about 2019 or so here as well, too. So it must be working pretty well for you guys to already decide to go for location number two, right?
Yeah. What we did is we saw the space available on 4th Avenue and University, and just like I said, the build out was going to be a fraction of what our first one was, even though it's a bigger space, more to it. It's just, like I said, that second gen aspect of the space was huge. And so we just said, if we're ever going to do a second location, like, you know, let's do it now. You know, we're not financially there yet, but one thing I tell a lot of aspiring restaurateurs and just business people, like, there's actually a lot of funding you can get, you can get lending, and it's painful, our loan on the first location, hurts us each month, but there's access to capital out there. If you really want to chase your dream and your passion, like, you just go all in.
I love it. Well, it's great to see a husband and wife combo working together in what's really a pretty difficult industry to work together on over here. Where do you guys like to go if you've got a date night on the rare night off from Banchan over here? Like, what's on the quick family roster, your Rolodex of cool locally owned restaurants?
Yeah, it's very rare because we're also like the Brady Bunch. We have, seven kids combined, so we don't get out that much. But our go-to date spot, we really like sitting at the bar at Charo Steak. Just getting like the guac and even just the burger there is really great. If it's a late night, we like going to Union Public House. Their kitchen's open till midnight. So I love the La Torta there. And then for pizza, for the treat with the kids, we'll take the kids to Jaime's Pizza Kitchen. The kids call it Jamie's.
Right. But yeah, we had Gabriel Moreno on the show just a few weeks ago as well, too. Great little spot right there on Congress.
Yeah, I think it's the best pizza in town. If it's all the kids and stuff, it's just a regular Tuesday night after Little League, we go to Paco's on Grand Craycroft.
Uh-huh. Great little spot over there as well, too.
Yeah, I love it. So, so those are kind of, we're kind of boring, things.
With five restaurants under your belt and seven kids, like, I can't even imagine how you find the time to do anything. Make it to any of those restaurants,
it's
quite
just
frankly.
Life in hyperdrive. Yeah.
Yeah, that is no small feat over there for sure. Like, that is a lot of moving parts over here, Matt.
Yeah.
So break it down for our listeners again. Like, where are the two Banchan chickens? Like, where can our guests interact and visit you guys?
So our first location is on the east side. Like I said, that goofy intersection of Pima and Tanga Verde, right next to the Jimmy John's there. And then we open our second location over at 4th Avenue and University. The one over on 4th Avenue is a great hangout spot. We got a bar, great place to watch the games. Me and my wife are really big Chicago Cubs fans, so we're planning on showing all the games, celebrate when the Cubs win.
Can we get a Heilman's old style over there yet?
Yeah.
Do you have old
style?
We
actually have this thing where, the Cubs won in 2016. So 16 after a Cubs win, 16 minutes after like the final out, it's old styles are only going to be 16 cents for 16 minutes. So,
I love it. Well, maybe we only have to wait another century for a Cubs 16. Victory here. any team can have a bad century, Matt. It's fine.
Yeah,
no big
deal. I know. So, But yeah, we're big Cubs fans, and so good place to watch the game. And then we got the Cats playing in the tournament now. So
yeah, we're excited for that one. I may be going up to Seattle actually to go see that first round game. We're working on some options over there to go visit with the team and check that one out too. Everyone's excited. I'm sure you guys are going to have that Cats game on at 4:35 this Friday, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
packed house for that one. And if we win, we'll have a Sunday afternoon game in Seattle as well, too, assuming we beat the Akron Zips.
I'm still traumatized from when I was like in second grade and we lost to Miami of Ohio. So I sweat every game, especially in the tournament.
We could have a few old styles and talk about all the ways the Cats have caused us pain and suffering over the years over here on Wake Up Tucson. It might be Go to Sleep Tucson after we have a few adult beverages.
But we love them. We love them.
Without a doubt. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on a Wednesday and tell us about your family and your experience in opening up Bonchon's. You've got a second location on 4th Avenue. Please go visit Matthew and his wife over there on either 4th Avenue or at 6310 East Tanga Verde. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to spend this Wednesday morning with you as well, too, on The Morning Voice. Thank you for spending part of your day with us. Kathleen Wynn coming up next after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.